I want to mood in for dinner tonight. I want one for dinner. Let's see. Last night I had Chinese. Night before that I had Italian. Then we had some Spanish food the night before that. Then the Mexican food last Tuesday was great. That was great. We tried some Jamaican food last Friday. That was pretty tasty. We even tried that Ethiopian dish. That was very, very good. You know what I haven't had in a while is a good bowl of Amish food.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome Amish, to the Amish Ron food. Van Dam Show. Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
I love Amish food. I love a nice bowl of Amish.
Whatever.
Tasty. Very, very tasty. Hey, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show. Oh, boy. Oh, you're in for trouble. It's trouble. It's going to be trouble. Hey, stop. What are you touching me there for? That's inappropriate. I like it, but it's inappropriate. Welcome to the program. My name is Ron Van Dam. Sit back the next 45 minutes to an hour. I'll be entertaining you like a little dopey puppet on a string, which is called a marionette, by the way, for those of you that may not know what the terminology is. I'm enjoying a nice bowl of Amish food. My throat's a little raspy today because I had a lot of raspberries last night. Very good, though. That's an Amish food. Well, the Iowa caucus is over. Sounds like a part of the body. Have you washed your caucus lately? Because, man, you got a dirty caucus, and that's not good for anybody. No one wants to go to the doctor if that caucus doesn't look better tomorrow. Caucus sounds like a dead body. We got into the home and there was a terrible stench of death in the living room, and we walked in and there was the caucus lying on the ground. It was awful. We had the people down from the coroner's office remove the caucus immediately and destroyed the caucus, and it was awful. Or it sounds like a plant in the desert, doesn't it? Yes, we were starving. We were walking through the deserts, sands of the deserts, and we were dying of thirst. And then we came across a caucus, and we cut it in half, and there was liquid inside, and if it wasn't for the caucus plant, we'd have died right on the spot. Anyway, the Iowa caucus was a few days ago, and Donald Trump came in second. And if you remember a quote from Donald Trump when he first started running for president, he said, quote unquote, "When you come in second, they forget you." Thus touting the fact that unless you're first, you're no good. Okay, Donald. Comes back to bite you in the caucus, doesn't it? And in the booty, Donald. Got you right in the booty. Someone took a bite out of your booty, Donald. Your little booty caucus. Anyway, Donald Trump second. Not so close, but, you know, he was second. And then Mark Rubio was right up on his ass. Mark Rubio was, like, right there by a very small number of votes. Rubio came in third. And, again, right on Trump's ass, which would make a very interesting campaign poster. which probably Trump supporters would find very appealing for some reason. I really don't know, but you can't go wrong. Apparently, you can't go wrong. So anyway, he wins the Ted Cruz wins the caucus. Ted Cruz is a they love their religion in Iowa. They really do. They pick corn and potatoes and go to church, and that's pretty much it. And I don't know anybody from Iowa, and if I did, I probably wouldn't even realize it. I don't know. Where are you from? Iowa. I'm sorry. I didn't get that. Where? Iowa. I'm sorry. I'm still not picking that up. What is it? Iowa. I don't know where that is. Is that where they... I'm sorry. I just... is that part of the country? I'm sorry. I apologize. I'm sorry. They're very into their Bibles and things like that, and they're very, very conservative. The conservative Republicans, they love their hardliners, so to speak. So here comes Ted Cruz. Now, Ted knows that he could do okay in Iowa. It's almost like his home state kind of thing. It's like it's his people. Iowans, I guess is what you call them, Iowans, are Ted Cruz's kind of people. And Ted indeed won the Iowa caucus. Now, a caucus is not similar to a primary. Primary people go to the polls, they vote, and they go home and have a sandwich. The caucus, you have to show up in the evening and you stay there for a few hours and you discuss things, and then you kind of do either a vote by secret ballot or do it in public by raising your hand, stuff like that, and they take a count. But it's a discussion group. It's almost like a jury. It's like a hung jury. It's like a hung caucus. All right, stop it. Ted Cruz did something that was a little underhanded, I believe. And this is what I hate about politics, and thus do not like Ted Cruz anyway, but now certainly doubly don't. Doubly don't. Hey, they got a little doubly don't. Look at him, little doubly don't. Here's the problem with Ted Cruz. He sent to households all across Iowa something in the mail, and it said in gigantic big letters on the mailing, it said, voting violation. So it sounded like, I got a voting violation in the mail. Holy shit, I'm going to die. Voting violation. And right under that, in smaller letters, it says, you are receiving this election notice because of low expected voter turnout in your local area. Your individual voting history, as well as your neighbors, are public record. Their scores are published below, and many of them will see your score as well. Go to the caucus on Monday to improve your score, and please encourage your neighbors to caucus as well. A follow-up notice may be issued following Monday's caucuses. Sounds like an official thing saying, you little piece of shit, you're not voting enough, and we're aware of it. And that could affect things, although we're not saying what. Nowhere on it does it say, this is a campaign thing from Ted Cruz. What Ted Cruz was doing, what his people were doing, was trying to get people to the polls, to the caucuses, that Monday, figuring that if they did, then they would be Ted Cruz people. They did, and they were, and Ted Cruz won. One might say that was a brilliant piece of campaigning. I say it was a divisive, disgusting, disguised mailing to intimidate people to go somewhere. You've got to realize that most of the United States is dumb people. Look at the number of supporters Trump has. Case in point, case closed. Most of America is dumb. They used to get their news from watching Jon Stewart on The Daily Show. That was their only source of real news, what they thought was real news. People are dumb. They watch the news, and then they listen to people on the news analyze the news, and then you're supposed to feel the way that the analyzers just felt. There's no room for you to come up with your own conclusions, your own feelings. You listen to the analyzers tell you what you should be thinking about what you just heard. We are a fucking dumb country, most of us. And I say this, and I mean it, Although some people say to me, Ron, you can't say that stuff. You can't say that stuff. People who live in urban areas are usually a little more with it. They deal with a section of society that comes across a more interaction with varied types of people. If you live in a melting pot situation, you're usually in an urban area. And that's a good thing. That's a good thing. Simulate yourself amongst the other people. When you're in a small rural town, all you know is Zeke, who runs the general store and is usually out of hard candy. And what Zeke thinks, because he runs the general store, must be godlike. As I said, the only thing you really do is pick corn, grow potatoes, and go to church. And that's pretty much it. Now, of course, there are Walmarts now all over the place where you can buy items from China. That simulates you into the world a little bit more. Simulates. But basically what I'm saying is, bottom line, if you're from a small rural town, usually in the South, you're considerably less aware than a hipper urban person from a city or a large town. And I'll go as far to say, because I said it, it becomes a fact. I don't think you can argue that point with me too much. So Iowa, being what it was, fell for this shit. And that's what I'm saying. You know what it's about now? It's a question of what you fall for, or if you're too smart to fall for it. That's pretty much where we divide our country. Are you stupid? Or do you think for yourself? Do you let somebody tell you what to think? Or do you draw your own conclusions? That's where I draw the line. And it's usually the Mason-Dixon where this happens. What Ted Cruz did was manipulative. And I don't like being manipulated. Do you? Do you? Here's another stupid part of our political system. George Bush, sorry, got the wrong name. Jeb Bush, I get so confused between all these Bushes. Jeb Bush, this is unbelievable, man. This is unbelievable. He spent, you know, there's a cost to reaching and campaigning with a voter, you know, through mailings and phone calls and all that kind of thing. Here's the amazing part, and this just blows my mind. Jeb Bush's campaign has issued that they spent on the average of $3,000 per voter to get their vote. And that's, no, they divide that up through television commercials and the number of, you know, households that television commercial can reach and that kind of thing, and mailings and all that. $3,000 a person. And as Donald Trump so eloquently said, and he's kind of right, he's right, like, if he says a million things, he's right once. He said, why didn't Jeb Bush just send $2,000 to every voter in Iowa and he would have won the election hands down? Jeb Bush gives you a check for $2,000. Go cash it and vote for him. Okay, I got to put my potato down first. He would have won. It's like the March of Dimes, sending me a dime in the mail every other month. Ron Van Dam from the March of Dimes, please contribute to the March of Dimes. And in order to make you feel as guilty as possible, to break down your morality as best we can, we are going to send you a dime in the mail. This is supposed to make you feel so guilty that you'll at least return the dime with a lot more money involved because you are being manipulated. Well, you're not going to do that to me. I'm keeping your damn dime. And now, thanks to you, I have $2.75 over the past few years. I love you, people. Hope things work out. Now, I know that sounds really crass and really horrible, but I will not be manipulated by having someone send me a dime in the mail to make me feel bad that someone sent me a dime in the mail. You know what? If you kept all your dimes over the years, you've been curing whatever you're supposed to be curing by now. And of course, the March of Dimes is a wonderful organization, but I don't respect their marketing because you're manipulating me. And Ron, don't be manipulated. There is a scam going on right now, and you stupid people will fall for this. You smart people will not. Phone calls are being made to houses and to abodes and to apartments, and the phone calls say the IRS is giving you notification that they are trying to get in touch with you in regards to a lawsuit. And it sounds like the lawsuit is against you. Perhaps the lawsuit could be against the IRS. I really don't know because I don't listen to the whole message. But ladies and gentlemen, here's the deal. The IRS does not call you at home ever. If they've got a problem with you, or you should have a problem with them, they will always contact you by mail and mail only. They have your address, you see. The IRS happens to have your address. How do they know your address? Because you give it to them every year. Because you have to. And even so, they pretty much know where you live. The IRS will never call you on the phone and say, Bob, is this Mr. Johnson? We're coming over to audit you in 10 minutes. We're going to sue you unless you pay us $2,000 immediately to this address. Beware of scams, ladies and gentlemen. The IRS does not contact you over the phone. Nothing is official through the telephone. And something else, telemarketers, and I want you to know about me and many of my friends and my listeners, we don't contribute over the phone necessarily. It's, you know, don't call me at home anymore. Do you wait until I sit down at the dinner table or on my couch watching Family Feud or something? Do you wait until I start putting the food in my mouth before you ask me to donate to something? We want to thank you for your donations in the past. You know what? That's not good enough for us. If you have the ability to donate, that means you have the ability to donate more. So I'm thanking you for your prior donation, and at the same time I'm saying, I recognized that we've got you hooked for donations. So more, please. And my response is, I already gave to your organization. Find somebody else who hasn't. Check them out. But now, because out of the goodness of my heart, I have donated to your organization, now I'm your patsy. Now I'm your go-to location to get more money. No. No. You know why? Because I'm not stupid, and I'm not going to be manipulated. No, baby. Ain't going to happen on my watch. Voting violation, Ted Cruz, you asshole. Don't manipulate people. Nobody likes to be manipulated. They're manipulated because they don't know they're being manipulated, and that means they're being manipulated. And people like you take advantage of stupid people. You assume we're all stupid, and then you'll weed it out after that, because the assumption is that we're all stupid. And you know what? In that case, you're not far off. You're not far off. That's why it works. Campaigns suck. I have been consumed by this presidential campaign since last summer, since July of 2015, and it's going to go all the way until November of 2016, and then probably a little bit past that too. And I'm already sick of it. Is this the way it's supposed to be? Like, I've got nothing else going on in my life other than to hear your little political bickerings back and forth. All you're doing is making me nervous, making me realize that every 4 years, nobody steps up that has a brain in their head. None of you. None of you. None of you presidential candidates are sufficient for me. Here's what I'm waiting for. I'm waiting for some guy or some woman to say, I'm an independent. I'm not them, and I'm not them. I am me. I am not a Republican, although some of their ideas are fine. I am not a Democrat, although some of their ideas are fine. I am in the middle. I will draw the best from the left and the best from the right, and I will do everything you wanted because I'm in the middle. And those of you far left, you will not vote for me. And those of you far right, you will not vote for me. But most of you who teeter around the middle, you are mine. We are together. And here I am. And I'm not doing this just because of one cause or one idea that I have in my head. I'm doing it on every level, domestically, internationally, as a people who want to have a thriving, possible life, who want this journey on this earth to be enjoyable, fruitful, and an experience from which we don't have to suffer necessarily. Because I'm in the middle, I don't know the left, I don't know the right, I just own the people. And the people own me. It's as simple as that. Get on my bus. Here we go. But is there one person in this gigantic country of 330 million people who get that message, who get that concept, who will step up? There's plenty of billionaires. Bloomberg, who is mayor of New York, a very rich billionaire guy, like a Trumpy kind of guy, although it's not in your face. Mayor Bloomberg didn't fly around in planes and stuff. He was a mayor. At one time, he was a Democrat. At one time, he was a Republican. Now he's thinking of running as an independent. Hey, you know what? Doesn't sound like a bad idea. But you don't have the balls to do it yet, Michael. Do it. Don't be afraid that you're a billionaire. You got Trump. It's working out for him. He shoves his money in everybody's face. When he lost the Iowa caucus, one of the first things he said was, I still like Iowa. I may come back here and buy a farm. I may buy something here. This is not a country of purchases. I like Iowa. I may buy a farm here. What are you talking about? What the hell are you talking about? You're throwing your money in my face again. How can the American people not mind having his money thrown in your face? I used to watch Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous with Robin Leach. And he used to go to the celebrities' homes. Here's the home of Joan Crawford. It cost $275 million. Look at this gigantic gold grand piano she has in her living quarters. She's got 26 bathrooms and 2,000 toilets in the house. How many do you have? Probably none. She's a lot more well off than you are. Look at how much she has and how much you don't. That show used to bother me. That show was nothing but money thrown in my face. Look at all the money all these people have. How well they live. How beautiful their homes are. How many rooms they have. The luxuries, the comforts. And you. And you, what do you have? A one-room apartment. You struggle to pay your bills every month. Well, you can escape that by watching people who have a lot of money who have no problems whatsoever. Even their drug problems are better than yours. You probably have drug problems, but you don't live in a nice place to have your drugs like they do. I'm tired of having money thrown in my face by rich people, Mr. Trump. You say it so nonchalantly, it's just part of your life. Your wives are all look like you pick them up off the city streets like they're hookers. I'm sure they're not. You want to date your daughter. If you weren't her father, you'd date her. You said that, you slimy little thing. Jared paid for that. Apparently you don't. He's on his third wife. That shows commitment. Well, he's part of America, I suppose. I mean, all in all, this guy is just crap. But at the same time, followers up the ass. Up the ass. So, my major point here is that why can there not be, it floors me, one person who steps out, who is apt, smart, gets it, and says, I'm in the middle. And I will bring everybody from both sides into the middle, and we'll finally get some stuff done here. We'll be able to pass legislation that will make this country better or whatever. Is there any question that most people in this country should have affordable health insurance? No, there isn't any question of that. I think we all believe that on both sides of the aisle, quote unquote. Why did you have to do Obamacare? Why couldn't you just sit down with the Republicans and the Democrats and come up with something that works for everybody? Did they do it? No, because they don't want the parties to look good to another. When Obama went to, after Hurricane Sandy, he went to New Jersey to tour the devastation from the hurricane. Chris Christie was there. Obama and Christie gave a hug. What the fuck's wrong with that? What is so wrong with that? What is so bad about that? And now Christie is backpedaling. He says, I didn't hug him. I wasn't hugging him. I was just doing the right thing. I don't want to touch that man. I don't want to touch him. No, I'm not aligned with him. Oh, that wasn't a hug. It was our bodies touched. I'm Chris Christie. How can my body not touch another body? I'm huge. That is disgusting in itself. Why can't two men, who one running New Jersey, one running the country, why can't they at a point go, hey, babe, how you doing, man? Is that so wrong? No, it gives a wrong impression, like I'm giving in to the other party. That's why this country doesn't go anywhere. That's why. The attitude of war within your own country. We don't have wars with the Middle East, or with Iran, Iraq, Pakistan, Afghanistan, Manistan, Fanistan, Shmanistan. Those aren't wars. War on drugs? Yeah, sure. You know what it is? It's a war on our own people. That's what this country is right now, a war on our own people. And the people know that, but they have nowhere to turn, so they make stupid choices like Donald Trump, like Ted Cruz, like Hillary Clinton, like Bernie Sanders, because he's just a socialist and that's what he said, period. No, why can't somebody show up in the middle and take this thing masterfully? You know, it's funny, I think the Rolling Stones said it best, and when a rock group says something best, you know there's something really wrong. You know, you can't always get what you want. You just can't. No, you can't. You can't. You really can't.
You can't always get what you want.
You can't.
And if you try sometime, you'll find you never
a glass of wine in her hand. I knew she was gonna meet her connection. At her feet was a footloose man. You can't always get what you want. You can't always get what you want. You can't always get what you want. But if you try sometimes, you might find.
You get what you need.
Yeah. And I went down get my fair share of abuse. Singing words gonna vent our frustration. If we don't, we're gonna blow a 50-amp fuse. Sing it to me.
You can't always get what you want. You can't always get what you want. You can't always get what you want.
But if you try sometimes, will you just fight fine?
You get what you need.
The Chelsea drugstore to get your prescription filled. I was standing in line with Mr. Jimmy. A man, did he look pretty ill? We decided that we would have a soda.
You can't always get what you want.
No.
You can't always get what you want. You can't always get what you want.
No. But if you try sometime, it just might find.
It's just my fine. It's just my fine.
Here's what the internet is good for. Porn, 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 really weird porn, porn, funny cat videos, porn, and the Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting. You know, when you need a little break from all those funny cat videos. Those things can really do a number on your wrist.
Yeah, baby. We're going to talk to a doctor now. It's about time we all saw a psychologist. You especially. You need to see somebody. It's not me, it's you. It's not you, it's me. It's me, it's you. It's you, it's you. It's me, it's you. It's you. It's you, it's me, it's me, it's me, it's you. Because you can't always get what you want. You can't. It was interesting. The choir in the background said, you can't always get what you want. You can't. You can't. And then Mick Jagger says, you can't always get, you can't. He's English. He's British. I thought he would have said can't as well, but he didn't. It's the bottle of the bottle. It's the battle of the bottle. It's the battle of the cons and the can'ts, ladies and gentlemen. Terrible, terrible battle that occurred. A lot of you have kids. A lot of my listeners have kids. Some of you know that you have kids. The others don't know it yet, but you do. Something as simple as one of your children having a cough or a cold, you'd figure, well, you know, that's like so common. Well, this particular doctor says maybe not. So we're going to speak to Dr. Lawrence Flint. I believe he would rather be known as Dr. Lawrence Flint than Dr. Larry Flint. Get it? I think you do. I think he does, too. Let's speak to Dr. Lawrence Flint right now, shall you? Good morning, Dr. Flint. How are you?
Hi, good morning, Ron. I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on today.
Pleasure having you here. Dr. Lawrence Flint is a pediatric hospitalist and adjunct assistant professor, Department of Health Informatics, Rutgers University. Pleasure to have you here. Okay. Let me do this for you right now. You ready? I'm doing that sometimes. And I know it's the season to be merry like that, but what are the ramifications of cough and cold season? I mean, what happens here?
Well, I don't know how it's up there, and I'm sure it's the same as we're having down in New Jersey right now, mm-hmm. but we're right in the middle of cough cold season. So this is a pretty appropriate topic that we're talking about, and symptoms are one of the things that we're looking to alleviate. Especially in our children. I'm a pediatrician, so yeah. I deal mostly with children. But what I'd like to talk to you about, where we'd like to start this morning, mm-hmm. is there's a new survey of moms and school nurses, and the results have just come out, pretty opportune time, mm-hmm. and I'd like to share some of those,
sure.
first of all, with your listeners.
Yes.
What we found out from the survey was that nurses and moms found, not surprisingly, that cough and cold has a significant negative impact on kids in a number of areas.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly their ability to focus, particularly in school, their energy level both in and out of school, school performance and missed time in the classroom. In fact, CDC says that over 22 million school days are lost each year, mm-hmm. Due to cough and cold alone.
Sure.
Additionally, children are getting less sleep than they need to. At a time when they need to be getting more sleep, they're getting less sleep during the time that they have cough and colds.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's interesting in and of itself, but I think the most interesting thing that we found in the survey is that when we asked school nurses, they said that 64% of these nurses, mm-hmm. said that they find that parents are worrying that they're not doing enough to alleviate symptoms of cough and cold in their kids.
Yeah.
However, when we asked moms, we find out that only 23% of those would actually consider contacting their healthcare professional, their pediatrician, for counsel on how to best manage these symptoms. And only 29% of them would contact their pediatrician for advice on over-the-counter medications. So I think the take-home message for your listeners with young children,
mm-hmm.
is that we're seeing a disconnect here between what parents need and what they're going out to get from their pediatricians, who are probably going to be their best resource in helping them to best manage these symptoms in their children.
Okay. I mean, I can imagine that as a parent, or even taking care of myself if I have a cough and I'm not feeling too great, that I wouldn't contact a medical professional until I had a temperature of some sort that was significant.
And sometimes that's what we see. Certainly myself, working in a hospital environment, I typically will see parents bring their children in at that time that they something triggered a reason to bring them in once they got to a certain point of being sick, whether it's fever, which is one of the things that brings them in a lot, or cough, which is another thing that is just, overly untreated. Parents often get worried when a cough lingers for a long time, and unfortunately that's really the norm. But like I said, there's things that we can be doing both from using over-the-counter medications when it's appropriate and when, with the advice of your doctor on that, as well as non-medication type of treatments to be able to help alleviate these things. I think it's important to remember, too, that each child is different. So what's important or what's useful in an infant is certainly going to be different than what's useful in a teenager. In regards to how we're treating these things.
Sure.
Each individual child may have other medical needs. Some children may have asthma, which require additional medications, and a cold on top of that may require more intervention than less in those children. So it's important, like I said, especially before cough and cold season, to partner with your pediatrician, to partner with your school nurses in how do I best address the needs in my individual child? Even with each cold, there may be different symptoms. So while one time we may have a very bad sore throat, the next cold may result in a lot of congestion, a lot of runny nose. So each of those symptoms needs to be addressed as best as possible with different medications or different measures.
So is the bottom line is what you're saying that if your child has a cough or cold, that you should contact your pediatrician or make a phone call? What is one to do?
I think particularly if you have questions about things, they're the first person that you should reach out to. That's what we're there for. Certainly if you're managing them well and if you discuss these with your pediatrician, I don't want to tell your listeners to call their pediatrician every time that your child has a cold.
Right.
But I think if there's questions and concerns that you have, they're your first stop.
Yeah.
They're the ones that you should be asking in regards to how do I best manage my child's illness.
Yeah. How do you feel about over-the-counter medications? Can you choose the wrong ones? Should you always check with your doctor first before doing something like that?
Again, it depends upon the age of the child and whether over-the-counter medications are the most appropriate treatment.
Okay.
So going to your pediatrician and getting educated, even using your pharmacist, talking to, school nurses, other healthcare professionals, understanding that there's so many things that are out there. There's multi-symptom medications that have a number of different ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
There's single ingredient medications.
Mm-hmm.
But all of these do something different.
Yeah.
From pain relievers to fever reducers to cough medications, it's important to be able to have that education behind you to be able to choose the right ones for the right symptoms that your child's having. So like I said, I think education is really the key component here.
Right. Makes sense. I mean, something as normal as a cough can lead to asthma, whatever the case may be, chest congestion, bronchitis. You don't know, actually. It can just be the threshold of something rather quick. Okay, so the best thing to do, I think bottom line, is set up a relationship with your doctor, pediatrician, and have a relationship. I don't mean in a a nasty sense, but you know what I'm saying.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Where
do we get more information?
So for these survey results, your listeners can go to the National Association of School Nurses website, which is available at www.nasn.org, and they can see what moms and dads like themselves have to say about these things.
Wonderful. Where are you from in New Jersey? What town?
I'm from Northern Jersey in West Caldwell.
Oh, I'm from Teaneck. I was born and raised in Teaneck. I don't know what I'm doing in Massachusetts, but that's something else. Doctor, pleasure speaking to you today.
Stay here. Thank you again for having me on.
Take care. Bye-bye. Actually, I lied. I wasn't born in Teaneck. I was born in New York, and then my parents moved to Teaneck and took me with them. They didn't have a choice. I was their kid. Well, I had a choice, but that was the choice they made. I'm out of time. I can't believe it. I'll be back again tomorrow with another show. Until then, I wish you peace.